Hello and welcome to On the Spot. My name is Mona Davids and I am the founder of Little African News and New York Voice News, as well as Real Talk with Mona Davids. Today for On the Spot, we have some great guests who are going to touch on, give their insight when it comes to New York City politics, the mayoral race, Albany, and of course, our national politics. So let's get started with the introductions. Yatin Chu, please introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. This is Yatin. I'm happy to be on with Mona, Michael, and Maria. I'm a longtime New Yorker, but just got into and interested in local politics in the last few years, and definitely watching all of the local races, especially the mayoral race, very closely, and happy to talk to you on this sunny Sunday.
Thank you, Yatin. And Maria Danzillo.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me, Mona, and hello to Michael and Yatin. My name is Maria Danzillo. I'm executive director of One City Rising. We are a good government group. I'm a lawyer. I grew up in New York City, Midwood, Brooklyn, and raised my three children on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, where I currently live. Oh, I also ran for New York City Council, District 6, and New York State Senate in 2021 and 2022, and have been involved in politics since about 2020.
Thank you, Maria. And last but never least, Michael Benjamin.
Hey, good morning. And I'm happy to be among all these ladies. Thank you. Michael Benjamin, I'm a former member of the State Assembly. I'm currently associate editorial board member, editorial board editor, editorial page editor at the New York Post. And I've been in Bronx politics, I guess, since 1982 or so. I've been following Bronx politics and New York City politics, state and national, for quite a long time.
Thank you, Michael. So let's just dive in. So top of mind, the mayoral race. You know, we know that the polls are showing that Andrew Cuomo is leading. The recent Honan strategy poll shows that in a ranked choice simulation, Andrew Cuomo is in the first round. Just what are your thoughts? Do you guys think that the polls are a reflection of voter sentiments, or do you think it's too early? So we'll start with Yatin. What are your thoughts on this?
I do think the polls is directionally right. Cuomo's name is known, and we all know in politics, knowing someone's name is like the most important thing, and that's what people do when they raise a lot of money, is to get their name out there. So no doubt Cuomo's the front runner. I think it was very interesting, his launch strategy, making a lot of buzz and intrigue. And for the media, he is right now the favorite. So Memdami, I think he's been pretty smart and working very hard on his campaign, and he is second place. Not a close second place, but still second place. And I think what's interesting is all of the other candidates are still kind of clumped together in that third group. So we'll see. I think things will change as they start spending their money. And I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more today.
Okay, so Maria, what are your thoughts on the race and Cuomo's lead and the other candidates still being stuck in the single digits?
Yeah, I was happy to see that Cuomo's numbers went up in the most recent polling from about a month ago. So I think he's, you know, heading in the right direction. It is early still. There's still another 5 or 6 weeks or so before early voting starts. So anything could happen. I was just listening to the Canada. There's a big election in Canada for a new government And the Conservative Party was ahead 25 points just a month ago, and now the Liberal Party's ahead. So, you know, polls, of course, it's not comparable to what's happening in New York City, but, you know, polls can change on a dime very quickly, as we saw in the last mayoral, where some of the leaders ended up not doing well at all. With that said, I think Cuomo is heading in the right direction. I think he's running a good campaign. You know, I think there's a kind of a love-hate going on here with people who are very supportive of bringing Andrew Cuomo back into politics, and those who have kind of like a Cuomo derangement syndrome. Unfortunately, I think some members of the media have not been as open to considering a Cuomo comeback. And I am concerned that the other candidates in the race are very, very far to the left. And without a good second choice, we could end up with a Dem candidate winning the primary who is way further left. I just want to make the note that in the last mayoral election, only 7% of New Yorkers voted in the primary. That's a really, really low number. So this is going to depend a lot on turnout. I think if we, if the vote comes out for Cuomo, I think it's going to be he'll be the clear winner. But I do think that we have a ways to go. One other point is that, you know, I do think New Yorkers are, you know, tired, and you know, I've heard from a lot of people that they don't vote because they just have voter fatigue. It's been a difficult couple of years. We went through 8 years of de Blasio. Now we have a divided government, with the mayor not getting along with the city council. And I think people are really tired. And one of the things that Cuomo does bring to the table is that executive experience, and the fact that he has received so many endorsements across the political spectrum, including from people who are, you know, considerably to the left, as well as more center and center right, shows that he can build a good coalition. So I hope that's the message that drives home to the voters as we head into the final stretch.
Okay, Michael, what are your thoughts on this? You think Cuomo peaked? What about the other candidates?
It's still early. The primary is still scheduled for June 24th. A lot can happen between now and then. I think part of Cuomo's lead is his, you know, his name recognition, his many years of service in New York, and the voters that are polled, you know, recognize his name. You know, we'll see what happens. I think as the candidates begin to, I guess, attack him and bring up his negatives, I think some of it will fall. It's ranked choice voting, so it's his race to lose, no matter how you cut it. It's his race to lose. The Mamdani thing, I think, is a product of a young generation of media journalists, reporters, who are taken by his videos, and are taken by the fact that he managed to speak Spanish in a video. Well, gee whiz, he could speak Spanish, and he had a coach during the video who was making sure his accent was on point, which is what actors do, right? I mean, he is an actor. His mom is a movie producer. He was a rapper. I mean, he's got performance skills. Performance skills are not how you govern the city of New York, and not how you manage our city. It's not how you manage the city's finances. Not how you improve our schools. It's not how you manage our police department. It's not how you lower crime and keep it low. It's not how we protect children who are in abusive and negligent family situations. He hasn't addressed those issues other than wanting to give you, you know, free mass transit and whatever else, and free groceries, at least a Soviet-style grocery store system across the city of New York. I mean, those are not the kind of policies that older New Yorkers, I think, want, or those New Yorkers who are naturalized citizens who escape from Eastern Europe or from, you know, Latin American dictatorships and socialist regimes that I really want to see here in New York City, other than the reporters who think it's nice to have a guy of color who does wonderful videos. That's not politics. That's not how policy is made. I think, you know, there are some other candidates in the race who are more centrist Democrats, more moderates, who may begin to pick up some momentum as we move closer to the June 24th primary and voters become sort of tuned in better tuned in to what's happening and what the messages are, and will begin to make their choices. And also comes down to who has the best operation to bring out their vote, and to bring out their vote as it pertains to the ranked choice. Because, you know, if you're a Andrew Cuomo voter, you might have a second choice who's not Andrew Cuomo, but maybe somebody who's also moderate in the event that Cuomo doesn't come out ahead. I would urge voters to not waste their vote. If you have ability to rank, you should rank through at least one through three. At least I know that's what I'm doing, because there are only a couple of candidates who, for me, meet my criteria for mayor that I would want to rank. And you take it from there.
Okay. And just, I'm curious also, what about the other candidates like Adrian Adams, Brad Lander, Scott Stringer, Zelnor, Michael Blake, and Whitney Tolson? Looking at the poll numbers, like, they are still in the single digits. And Adrian Adams, she's the city council speaker. Brad Lander is the controller and former city councilman. You have Zelnor Myrie, who is a current state senator. Like, I don't understand what's going on with their engagement strategy, especially among Black and Latino voters, that they're polling in single digits and the numbers are not moving. So, Maria, what are your thoughts on those single digit numbers for people like Scott and others?
Yeah, it is very surprising. Adrian Adams came into the race very late. She seems to be hooking her star to Tish James, who's under a lot of pressure right now with one and possibly two investigations. So I'm not sure that Adrian Adams, who was late to fundraising, late to declare, I think the sense among the perhaps inside baseball crowd is that she was in there really to be a spoiler to Cuomo because of the very bad feelings between the Attorney General and James and Andrew Cuomo. I'm not sure that Adrian Adams has a path forward. I don't know how popular she really is among New Yorkers and voters. And I'm not sure that, she's really been leading a very left-leaning city council. She's really catered to the far-left progressive caucus for the last 4 years. So I'm not sure she's really built a following among the moderate coalition of middle class and working class New Yorkers from the five boroughs who really want to see sensible, good policies that Andrew Cuomo really represents. So I don't see Adrian Adams gathering much steam, but, you know, I could be wrong. As far as Scott Stringer is concerned, I think Scott was a front runner 4 years ago, and then there were charges brought against him in a Me Too situation. So I don't know if that's hurting him now. I haven't seen much of him, so I'm not sure what kind of how his campaign is going. I think he could be out among people a little bit more and get his message out, and that could help. I think Mondami has been sucking up a lot of the oxygen with his Havana on the Hudson kind of approach to reinventing New York. And I think that, like as Michael pointed out, that young journalists seem to love it. And the young people, they, you know, were in my neighborhood on the Upper West Side, handing out flyers and all of that. And, you know, he seems to have a big following, I think, to Michael's point. His videos have been popular. He is a good actor. His mother is a filmmaker. So, you know, I think they have been popular. But, hopefully between now and when the polls open, we will be able to get more sensible. The voters will see that there's a sensible path forward and that we really want to vote for the adult in the room.
Okay.
The adults in the room.
Yatin, do you see any of these candidates that are all, single digit poll numbers? Do you see them out in the communities? Do you see them engaging voters? Do you see, are they anywhere? or is it just on X?
I have not yet seen these candidates on the streets. Actually, I was in Forest Hills yesterday for a meeting with Scott Stringer, the former controller and Manhattan borough president. And it was interesting. We're in a diner and some people kind of walked by and said, "You look familiar." You know, this is Queens. He was a Manhattan borough president. He was controller. So I think in the outer boroughs, people like Scott Stringer, people like Brad Lander, while they are holding citywide offices like the controller, it's really not as prominent as the mayor. I mean, and so for the average vote, like Jessica Ramos, they have been representatives of their districts, and we're talking about, you know, a city council district in Queens, a Senate district in Queens. There, a lot of people just still don't know who they are. I think people like us, and certainly the political media and the candidates themselves, think that they are larger than they really are in the minds of average New Yorkers. So, like, how much will the spending, the taxpayer-funded matching funds, how much would that come to play in helping some of these candidates? Maybe a little bit for the ones that have raised a lot of money. But, you know, Adrian Adams came in late, so I don't think she's going gangbusters in terms of her fundraising. Jessica Ramos has not done well in her fundraising either. So, you know, even when it comes time to spend their money in the little weeks before the primary, some of them will just not have the juice. You know, I think Adrian Adams had benefited from her pulpit as a speaker at city council and have pulled in, you know, some reasonably significant endorsements for her coming in late. She certainly, I think, pulled in favors, and I'm sure many of the city council members felt somewhat pressured to back her. But that's kind of my two cents for the bunch that are still not doing well. I think that once they start spending their money, some of them may come up a little bit, and Cuomo can only go down from here. But lots going to happen in the next few weeks.
Yatton's right. They're not spending their money on television, on advertising to get their name out. And now, actually, neither is Andrew Cuomo. He's getting a lot of free media, but he also has an IE that's supporting him that's been on the air for quite a long time, since he announced. And so they're out there putting his name out on media all the time. So it'll be a while before the other candidates have a chance to catch up. Yeah, Scott gets recognized because he was once the city controller, so he's vaguely familiar, at least his face is. The others, you know, they all come from small districts. And, as a former assemblyman who once got over his political skis and thought he could run for a public advocate, campaigning citywide is exhausting. It's a big city to get around. I mean, I went to Staten Island. I had gone to Brooklyn. I've been in Queens. It's exhausting to go from one place to the other unless you have a Star Trek style teleporter. It's really hard to do and to become better known that way. You really do need media, free media, as well as paying for on their advertising, get your name out constantly. You know, as Mayor Adams likes to point out, we don't have a Mayor Yang, because Andrew Yang was once in the lead in the 2021 mayoral race, and he didn't last to the finish line. Eric did. And for those who think, who say that Adrian Adams was put in as a spoiler, well, they're not understanding how ranked choice voting goes. And in my view, any Adrian Adams voter who has her first, I would suspect many of the older ones would have Andrew Cuomo second. So since she's not going to be the first candidate, she's not going to win. I mean, I think many of her votes are going to go to Andrew Cuomo, as what happened to the benefit of Eric Adams when other candidates' votes went to him and not to Catherine Garcia or Maya Wiley. So I think, Cuomo has a better shot than the others because of the older voters who may be voting for one moderate over him, but they'll have him ranked second or third. And as their choices fall out, he will benefit from that. So either way, I think that's a part of what you're seeing in his lead, and what you're seeing when the polls, like the Honing Strategy one, goes out to the ranked choice through the fifth vote, through the fifth round of voting, he comes out the winner because he starts out with a base of 35% to 41% of the vote. And it's not going to be a hard struggle for him to get to 50% and be declared the winner in round four or five. I suspect it might even be earlier. It might even be around four. But again, you know, he's not he would not be my first choice, but I know there are others who would make him either their first or their second or their third choice, and they would probably be able to help push him over the line based on how ranked choice voting goes. You know, Zelnar Myrie, you know, I had said to my editorial board members back when Al Sharpton talked about putting together a group of African-American leaders to come up with a candidate, I said my thought would have been for them to come out and support Zelnar Myrie. At the time, Adrian Adams was not the candidate for mayor, but he was. And I thought he was of the black candidates that were running. He's the one that seemed to be the most, I guess, moderate among those, although he does have some left views. But I think he's been tacking to the center far better than others have. But he hasn't benefited from any real media, free media. Only when, you know, the WFP did their ranked choice notification and news conference, when DC37 did theirs, he was there and they saw his face, but that's not going to be helpful as you need it to on a daily basis. So yeah, they're all facing an uphill battle for exposure, and it's not happening.
So speaking of endorsements, Michael, how valuable do you think these endorsements are? Because when we look at DC37's endorsements, they endorsed Adrian Adams, Zelnar Myrie. Who's the other one? Who's the third one? Is it Brad Lander?
Brad Lander. Brad
Lander. And when you look at 1199's endorsement, they just endorsed Andrew Cuomo, which, you know, is a big deal because 1199 is the largest private sector union in New York City, and DC37 is the largest public sector union in DC. In New York City. But I mean, how much weight are these union endorsements, and how much weight do you think are the clergy endorsements that, you know, people are getting? Do you think it's making a difference?
I don't think the clergy endorsements make much of a difference. I don't think they're able to pull anybody beyond the members of their various flocks. But I do think the union endorsements are effective, are helpful, because one, it's not just about, yes, they can move their voters to the polls, their members to the polls. They also have the member to member, and people tend to trust family and union members when it comes to endorsements for office, who they think they ought to vote for. But they do, you know, ultimately they make up their own minds. But also you get union resources where you get the, you know, telephone calls, the telephone banking, which is key to you know, get out the vote efforts for early voting and for primary day itself. So the unions are helpful in that regard. There's also the money. There's boots on the ground to be everywhere, be in a subway system, be in housing developments, be on street corners, be at the grocery store, handing out your flyers at the subway stops, handing out the candidates' flyers and encouraging voters to vote and to rank their choices. I think they're important in that regard. So if you're a candidate who's trailing and you're not getting a lot of TV time, the fact that DC37 is behind you and they've got all these members and who will also be flooding the street, putting out your name, you have a better shot than without having the endorsement of the unions. And there are some unions that don't really have a lot of members in the city, but they do offer you the opportunity for you to benefit from their phone banking and from volunteers who do door knocking on your behalf. So I think union endorsements are still valuable and helpful today.
Okay. I want to pivot to the borough president races. I understand for Queens, Yatin, that Donovan Richards, for example, I don't know, does he still have a race? Or there isn't anyone on the ballot running against Donovan Richards? And then when we look at Brooklyn, speaking of endorsements, DC37 surprisingly did not go with the incumbents in Brooklyn. They went with Corey Edwards for the Brooklyn race, but they did endorse Vanessa Gibson for the Bronx, and I'm not sure who they endorsed for Manhattan Borough President. But I mean, Yatin, is there any interest or excitement that you're detecting that when it comes to these borough president races, or is it even on anyone's radar?
Well, let's start with Queens. I would say that Donovan Richards has it in the bag. I'm not thrilled with kind of where he stands on a lot of the issues, including City of Yes, which is very unpopular in Queens. Only two of the numerous community boards voted in support of that, and he supported City of Yes. I think he comes across as someone who works with everyone. He shows up, part of his job, showing up at you know, ribbon cuttings and so forth. I don't think he's done. I think the people who are paying attention are unhappy with where his positions lie in some of these policy issues. I don't think he's made enough of a stink about anything. And when you meet him in person, he's a very likable guy. And when I talk to electeds, local electeds in Queens, even if they don't agree with him, they work with him. So I don't think that he's in danger at all. I don't know who actually the Republicans have running against him. I'm not paying attention as much because there's no primary there. But I think he's safe. I think the most exciting race that has some juice is the Brooklyn Borough President's race. Kerry Edwards came in pretty strong with a very respectable fundraising number. And, Brooklyn is very diverse. And speaking for the Asian community that has grown so much in Brooklyn, and with a Democrat, Susan Zhuang, being elected in South Brooklyn and trying to continue to register voters, activate voters, and gosh, they're pissed off about a lot of things in that area. So they're going to, they have a reason to come out and vote. I think so. It has been kind of quiet. I mean, you just don't hear from him on anything. So I'm not sure. Besides the political class, Reynoso is well known in the district since he got elected. And I'm not sure what accomplishments, and I want to say for the Asian community, I'm not sure there's a big reason to go with the incumbent there. I think Kerry Edwards may be someone that could win some of the ethnic communities within Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, you make a good point, because what was very surprising for me, and that also speaks volumes, is that DC-37 went with Corey Edwards. They did not endorse the incumbents. And that was quite interesting. And then when we look at 1199, 1199 didn't even make an endorsement in the Brooklyn president race. And in my opinion, not making an endorsement is not endorsing the incumbent. At least that's the way I would look at it. So it's really quite interesting. Maria, what's going on with the Manhattan Borough President's race?
Yeah, it's not getting a lot of attention. There are two, it is an open seat because Mark Levine is running for controller. So it's Brad Hoylman, Hoylman Siegel, who's the district he is the current New York State Senator for 47, and Keith Powers, who's an Upper East Side city council member who's term limited. So this could be similar to the matchup between Nadler and Malone a few years ago, Maloney a few years ago, East Side versus West Side, with Hoylman Siegel representing the West Side 47, and Powers, who represents a much smaller district but is from the east side, so it could be very similar. I do note that Keith Powers just got Richie Torres's endorsement, which carries a lot of weight among West Side voters. So that could switch things up. I haven't been following all of the different endorsements in that race, but I do know, I think Michael pointed out in our last call, in our last meeting, that the West Side generally has very high voter turnout and usually has more, you know, power and say in who gets elected. So that's kind of where we're at right now. But there's still, you know, a ways to go, and we'll see over the next few weeks how the candidates get their message out with mailings and start spending money. I think they both, I don't know their fundraising numbers, but I know Wellman Siegel has certainly raised quite a bit of money. So, you know, we'll see what happens over the next few weeks. I do want to mention that if Wellman Siegel does get the nomination, he will, that will leave that District 47 Senate seat open. He's been in that seat, I think, for 9 years. So that's going to be an interesting race in 2026.
Okay. And Michael, the Bronx, we have Vanessa Gibson, the incumbent, and we have Councilman Rafael Salamanca, who's term limited out, running for Bronx Borough President. What are you hearing about that race? There seems to be a lot of posts and articles about the borough president's office, lawsuits about the Kingsbridge Armory, questions about how her office is run. What are you hearing?
Yeah, those are the things I've heard of in that race, particularly around Vanessa Gibson's management of her office, particularly the one project, the white elephant in the Bronx, the Kingsbridge Armory, and what to do with it. They are still working on another project to try to turn it into something, turn a nothing into something. And even that has turned into some sort of political fight, lawsuit over possible insider dealings involving her former deputy and her former employer and their support for having won, their support for an organization that won the bid, the contract to convert the armory into a commercial venture. And the parties that lost are now suing, claiming that it was unfair for the board president's deputy to be involved in the negotiations and around the contracting and the bidding, and then for a client representative for her former employer to be selected. But adding to the drama is that the deputy, whose name I apologize for not knowing, because she hasn't been, in my mind, that visible to know what her name is. All I know is that she's a Dominican woman. Mm-hmm. And now she's resigned and has, and there's speculation she's going back to employment with her former employer. And so that adds even more to this political drama and intrigue and possible scandal. And that may wind up, hurting Vanessa, whether or not there was some, malfeasance or insider doings that would be unethical and in fact probably illegal. That's going to cloud her campaign. Yes, she's raised money, as has her opponent, City Councilman Rafael Salamanca, who's raised a great deal of money because he's been a very effective councilman and chairman of the council's land use committee. So he's able to have raise money for real estate and others that are interested in development. And when I came back from spring break with my boys in Legoland, I found a Salamanca flyer in my door, which means that his team was out in Pelham Bay door knocking and visiting voters. I've yet to see anything from the incumbent borough president, other than reading in newspapers about this, this scandal involving her office and that white elephant, known as the Kingsbridge Armory.
Yeah, it's very interesting that her deputy borough president, when she announced that she was leaving, she said it was to spend time with her family. When Vanessa Gibson announced that she was leaving, and it turns out that she's going to work for the same, for a former lobbying company that's caught up in this lawsuit. It's going to be interesting, I think. I wanted to talk just very briefly about the other two citywide races, which is Comptroller and Public Advocate. So with the public advocate race right now, if I'm not mistaken, it's pretty much down to Jennifer Rajkumar, Assemblywoman Jennifer Rajkumar from Queens, and the incumbent Jermani Williams. And this past week, there's been a whole brouhaha over a cartoon, a meme, I guess some people will call it that, on social media, where Jennifer Rajkumar's campaign put out that pretty much Jermani sleeps until noon, he's taking a nap, and another one talking about the fact that the public advocate's office is still holding a COVID schedule, meaning the office is mostly on a remote schedule. The majority of the staff, over 50 staff members, are working remotely, and the office is just really never open to constituents, to New Yorkers. So I want to talk about that. Maria, what are your thoughts on the public advocate's office still operating like we're in COVID?
Well, I think your introduction to the question kind of, you know, says it all in terms of making a case for why we shouldn't have a public advocate. And if ever there was a race that's adding the most interesting drama for those of us who are following this, it's the nastiness going on in that public advocate's race. So you put those two things together, we really should take a hard look at why New York City needs to spend millions of dollars funding a public advocate office. That Jermani Williams has been facing this criticism over the fact that he's kept his office closed for 4 years, and it hasn't moved him to reopen the office. This is old news in terms of his office being closed and not people not being available and not really helping. You know, there's also all of the, you know, concerns about, you know, the fact that he lives in a gated community in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. You know, there's been a lot of things following Jermani around for a while. He is quite popular, though, among people. You know, he's certainly, you know, got a very likable persona. But I do think the public advocate's race, there are other things going on in that race that we won't bore your listeners with because they're silly. But there's been among the candidates who have not raised any money, might not even be on the they might not even make the ballot. We don't know. Really going after Jennifer with some, I think, very sexist, misogynist kind of attacks. So, you know, we've got people calling what she's doing racist, but other people doing things to her that I think are very sexist and misogynist. So it's an ugly, ugly race. And my vote would be to abolish the public advocate in New York City.
Yeah, Maria just wrote a New York Post editorial about the.
Oh, really?
Sounds like her comment should be in one of our editorials assailing the necessity for abolishing that office. Well, we once endorsed Curtis Sliwa, the public advocate, because he promised he would work to abolish his own office if elected. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing between Jermani and Jennifer Rajkumar is actually started by Mayor Adams during his press availability on Monday, where he disparaged the public advocate. He's the one who said he gets up at noon and then does a little bit of work before going back to bed. So it really isn't racist for her to do a meme based off of what the mayor said, who I believe is an African American, and who was disparaging somebody who's also a fellow Brooklynite that he has had disagreement with. So, you know, I think it's fair game for Jennifer or anybody else who's running for office to bring up the fact that Jermani's office, you know, is not functioning at 100%. They're not all in their offices. It makes you wonder, like, why are we paying rent for his office in that building and services when nobody's there taking care of their constituents? I mean, you can't do a lot of remote constituent work in my view, but he seems satisfied with that. And I think he's also criticized by Jennifer for being more of an advocate of an activist than being a public advocate. You know, and she's a lawyer and she wants to bring the office back to what, you know, Tish James was doing when she was a public advocate, which was launching lawsuits that turned out to never go anywhere. So I don't really see where lawsuits by the public advocate, whether it's Jennifer Raj Kumar, should she win, or Tish James, or even Mark Green, the original public advocate, who also launched lawsuits that weren't always successful and actually moved the needle in New York City. So I'm with Maria. End of the day, whatever happens in this race, New York need to seriously consider whether or not we need to keep the public advocate's office functioning. It's something. It's an anachronism. It was put in the charter as a way of trying to create a post that would enable, you know, quote unquote, minority candidates to run for the office and then eventually, you know, leapfrog into the mayoralty. And it hasn't done that, and it shouldn't be. We shouldn't have an office to exist without any real function other than to launch a political career for somebody to try to run for mayor.
Well, it worked for Bill de Blasio. Yatin, what are your thoughts on the public advocate race and, you know, whether or not we need a public...
Well, if you could not have people... Yeah. I'm, you know, Michael and Maria said it. You know, if you could have an office and I don't know what the budget is, I'm sure it's millions and millions of dollars, where are you as an office? And I think that the budget, the resources for the public advocate will be better spent closer to constituents, divvy it out across the 51 districts, city council districts, and have those offices do the work. They're open. I know my city councilwoman's office is open, and versus having someone in Manhattan's office there, who, if you go there, will have a sign on the door saying, you know, reach us by email or phone. So I think the race is, you know, for now, the position is there, and Jennifer Raj Kumar is doing a lot of ground game. I think because, she's an assembly member of a district in Queens, she needs to get her name out citywide. She is definitely reaching out to a lot of community, ethnic community. I see her doing the hard work of reaching out to people and making that connection. And while Jumaane, it's clear to most people what he does for us. So I think there's an opening for her, and you know, she needs to, hacking him is the best thing. I'm of the mindset as, why float someone else's name? Like, you're out there doing the work. Just get your name out there, and just, you know, and I hope she wins. So,
okay, well, the other race, of course, is the comptroller's race, and we have four candidates in that race. We have Justin Brennan, Mark Levine, Ismail Malave, and Kevin Parker. So I'm just curious, what are you guys' thoughts on the comptroller race? I mean, most New Yorkers don't even know what the comptroller does. Michael, what do you think of this race?
It's a snooze fest. Nobody's covering it. Maybe it should start doing videos, like viral videos like Mom Donnie to get some press attention. You know, most people don't understand what a public advocate, what the city comptroller does. You've got probably four of the most boring men running for that office. I mean, yeah, other than Kevin Parker, who's made the post for negative behavior, nobody else is that well known. I mean, yeah, Justin has did a couple of op-eds in the Post. I couldn't tell you what Mark Levine accomplished as the board president of Manhattan. The only thing I really know about him is that he's a bestie with Congressman Nadira Espaillat. That's all I really know about Mark Levine. I think, you know, I know a little bit more than your average voter. So that's why that race is remaining a bit of a snooze fest. It's going to come down to, you know, the union endorsements and unions going door knocking and doing, you know, the telephone calls to get out the vote to press the message for whomever they endorse. But that race is an actual snooze fest, and it's one of the most important offices we actually have in New York City that's important. And if it's run and the job is performed correctly, it can provide a really invaluable service to New Yorkers. I would say in my years as a conscious voter in New York, I thought John Liu was the most effective city controller. I mean, his open NYC, where checkbook NYC, where he listed all the contracts that were paid and what they were going for, it was a valuable service. I thought he managed the pension system well without injecting, you know, environmental politics or racial inequity politics into it. He functioned to get the best return for New York pensioners and those who are going to be earning pensions in the future.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that's one of the reasons why One City Rising and Little Africa News is having our candidates forum on Wednesday, April 30th, both the public advocate and the comptroller, so that we can ask these questions, so that we can help inform and educate voters about those two positions and how important that comptroller's office really and truly is. Maria, I mean, Mark Levine, he's from Manhattan. He's your Manhattan borough president. Michael says that he hasn't really heard anything about what he's doing. Can you shine a light on anything? What does Mark Levine do? And, you know, how do you see his race going?
It is unfortunate that this is, as Michael put it, a snooze fest. I think if we can dig up some of the old videos of Justin Brennan singing with his rock band and pretending that he was a dog, maybe we could bring some life into the race and some drama. It is a snooze fest with two candidates who, neither one of whom has actual managerial financial background or education credentials that we should have in our controller. And I, as a matter of policy, would love to see us move toward requiring our controllers to have at least a CPA and some sort of experience managing the 10th largest economy in the world, a multi-billion dollar budget. I'm glad, Michael, you brought up John Liu, because I do agree that he was a really strong controller. And we forget about that this is an important role that New York fills by electing someone as opposed to, you know, hiring someone to manage our finances. I think it's a really important race and a really important position. And frankly, Lander has been a huge disappointment. All of the things that could have happened the last 4 years to bring transparency to our incredibly bloated budget, and the fact that our budget for homelessness has doubled in the last couple of years and we're not seeing the results. You know, there should be a dashboard on there that shows exactly what contracts we're signing. So much harm has been done by the mismanagement of our finances. And I would have liked to have seen, the candidates running on reforming that office. Neither Brannon nor Mark is running on reforming the controller's office. I think Mark also is from the Upper West Side. He's very, very popular in our district, the Upper West Side. I like Mark very much. He has integrity and he is straightforward. And I think, you know, if nothing else, I think he will be an honest controller. And that's keeping the bar pretty low, if you will, for what the role really can do. But that's the positive on Mark. I do think he's raised a lot of money and he is talking to a lot of smaller groups. So, you know, there's time for mailings. Justin, he was chair of the City Council Finance Committee, if I'm not mistaken. So has worked closely on budget negotiations. So in that respect, I think he will, you know, bring that experience to the office. But I haven't heard much from Justin either. I don't know if there's been polling on it, but I would imagine the Upper West Side is going to play a big role in the race. As far as Kevin Parker, I haven't met him. I look forward to meeting him. You know, I wish he was a little more visible because I think he would put a little more pizzazz into this very boring race.
Yeah, we also have Ismail Malave, who actually does have experience working in the comptroller's office, in the state comptroller's office. I don't know if he's ever worked for a city.
He worked in the city as well. He's worked city and state. He has an MBA. And he and Kevin Parker are actually colleagues at one time in the state comptroller's office.
Okay.
So yeah. And Ismail actually has a platform about reform, but he's not getting coverage because he hasn't met the threshold for campaign finance funding. So reporters are using that, and those are putting together forums are using that as a reason to keep him out. And that's highly, highly unfair in my view. I have to admit that Ismail and I have been friends for about 30 years now. I remember when he was a 20-year-old helping in a city council campaign, and I was managing that race. And he was he did a good job for me. And then he's moved on and moved up and started working for controllers, beginning with, I believe, city controller Alan Hevesy before moving up to the state controller's office a couple of times. He's worked for under John Liu. Again, like I said, he was a colleague with Kevin Parker, and he actually went out and earned an MBA in finance. So he is understanding of the role of the office. And he has talked about using the office to go after corruption. The comptroller's office can dig up evidence and signs of waste, fraud, abuse, and corruption, and actually do reports, investigations, and then pass it on, you know, to the appropriate authorities if they find criminality. Most controllers only want to try to use the pension fund to advance their political ideological agenda, whether it's on climate change, the environment, DEI issues, rather than, you know, trying to get the best return, for New York pensioners and those who are in the pension system. And you haven't seen them talking much about the president's tariff disarray having a negative effect on the pension fund. Because if the pension fund, which is based on returns on Wall Street and the bond market, you know, doesn't meet its 7% benchmark, that has to be made up by taxpayers. Taxpayers have to make up that difference in order to make sure that, you know, New Yorkers who are on pensions, who have city pensions, municipal pensions, because the pensions are guaranteed. So the fallback is having taxpayer funds go into making up the shortfall to ensure that our pensioners who did service for the city of New York for 20 or more years, continue to receive pension benefits timely. And that's not being discussed by any of the candidates running for the current comptroller or those that are running for his office, other than what I've heard from Ismail Malave. And Maria's right. If Kevin Parker were more visible, he'd add some pizzazz. Not only is he probably the best dressed of the four candidates, he actually has something to say when he has something to say.
Well, that's true. And, you know, with Wednesday's polling, it's no African News and One City Rising, but we also have Asian Wave Alliance that is partnering with us for Wednesday's Public Advocate and Controllers Forum. And my question to Yatin is, you know, have you heard about any of the other candidates, Kevin Parker and Ismail Malave? And if not, what are your thoughts on the lack of coverage for these other two candidates who happen to actually have the professional experience when it comes to city finances and finance backgrounds?
Mona, I have not heard much about the other candidates at all. I think the last time I really heard of Kevin Parker was a few years ago when he was taking an AISH SAT stance. That's the last thing I remember him for. If anything, Mark Levine and Justin Brennan are the two that I'm hearing anything about, and they're not the most exciting characters running for a very serious job that's important. And I'm looking forward to the forum that you and Maria's organizations are leading, and Asian Wave is a community partner in that. I think it's super important for, you know, we talk that have worked for the city, and the seriousness of a return on our investments in giving back to them in their pensions, and using that office. And I think John Liu did some of the audits. He did some audits on schools that I'm yes, aware of. So using that office and all of the access and the data to not just provide transparency on how our tax dollars are being spent, but also highlighting possible corruption and things that need to be audited in the city. You know, the budget keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the average person is wondering, like, I'm not feeling any benefits of where our money is going. And I think the controller can definitely get a lot of attention for people who are really strapped, right? I mean, affordability is on everyone's minds. It powered the presidential race. It's something the mayoral candidates are talking about. And yet no one's asking where our money is going to. You know, we're paying high taxes in New York City. People worry about, you know, food and rent prices, you know, freezing rents. But, you know, for many New Yorkers, you know, 30% of our income is going towards our taxes. I mean, of a large part to the city taxes. And I think the controller office has a responsibility to track and make sure it's being used well and to earn the needed income for the pensions. So it needs more coverage, but like, you know, controller is just not very exciting with four men running for it. We're not very exciting either.
Monica, I had two things. One is a question for Yacht, and the other one is going back to the controller's race. My brother Vernon is an auditor. He's a forensic auditor, and he's worked for banks. He's worked in the bank industry and healthcare. And over the years, the amount of corruption that he has found in these small, you know, billion-dollar industries is amazing. So you can imagine how much corruption there must be in the contracting in the New York City's, you know, $100+ million you know, budget, and what could be uncovered by a controller's office that actually has a forensic auditing unit that does those kind of audits to crack down on waste, fraud, abuse, and corruption in New York City, and what it would mean to taxpayers, you know, to make sure those who are stealing our money, you know, are punished, and that's so very important. The question I really had for Yatin, as a leader of one of the leaders of Asian Wave, what are the candidates, whether it's they're running for mayor, public advocate, or city controller, what are they saying to address, you know, the Asian community across New York City, which I know is very diverse. And, you know, last year everybody was up in arms about the inroads Donald Trump made in that community when it came to votes for president. But yet nobody's talking about how you want to address your policies in New York City that would encourage you know, Asian New Yorkers and maybe Democrats either to vote for you or to remain in the party. And what is it you're going to be doing in those communities, whether it's around, you know, specialized high schools, or surround anti-Asian violence, you know, with crime in general, support for small businesses, you know, looking at reducing property taxes for people who are homeowners. I mean, I haven't heard anyone other than the folks who are marveling at, you know, Mom Donnie's ability to speak Spanish in one video. Is anybody speaking Mandarin?
Michael, that's Cantonese? A very good point. Well, that would truly impressive. It's easy even for an actor to get all the tones right. So I will give him credit for that. That if they try. In terms of the mayoral candidate, more centrist than the candidate pool we were getting before he entered the race. So I think he does, and I know that he has the issues for the mayor that the Asian community cares about. I'll just list. I mean, education, in recent memory, what motivated many of us to get involved in local elections and just go out on the street and protesting is around public schools and access to excellent public school education. The Asian community in New York City is largely a low-income, working-class, middle-class community that a lot of the bad policies that we've seen in the last 4 to 8 years has really impacted us. You can't be shielded. And I think, this Asian community as well as other communities, but certainly, how public transportation, how safe you feel, the hate, some of the language, whether it's, from, Donald Trump or just things that are happening, that whether or not you're specifically targeted, the fact that crime has gone up and, hopefully it's being addressed in a way better, a little better now than it was a few years ago, you feel unsafe. So I think schools, public safety, the siting of homeless shelters, which is a combination of feeling safe and quality of life. And as the community with the largest, I want to say just homeowners, it's Asians, I think certainly the Chinese, you're encouraged to buy your first property. Like, why waste money on rent? So there's definitely a cultural, taxes are really high, and some of the things, like some of the things that, the money has gone through. So Cuomo knows what they are, how much he's going to do about it, being part of the state government, being a governor that was passed, went along with, at the very least, with a lot of the laws that we are against, from eviction moratoriums to bail reform. People know, but we also have to realize what some of the others may bring in. So it's like, all right, well, we don't love all the things that he has brought to New York City, but, maybe he's had a slight change of mind and is moderating a little more given how progressive the rest of the pool is. But I think Scott Stringer, his campaign director, is an Asian woman that's trying to help him with the Asian community. And it's why we met with him yesterday. I think he's trying to reach out to and be sympathetic to a lot of the concerns.
Okay, well, thank you, Yatin. So I think that we touched on the races, the citywide races, the borough president races. Next time, one of the things that I do want to touch on when we have more time is the competitive city council races. So that's something for us to discuss next time, because I know in Queens, we have the open seat, Bob Holden's open seat, and that race is getting very, very interesting. And we have races in Manhattan as well as in Brooklyn that are also starting to heat up. So it would be great to cover those the next time. But Maria, Yatin, and Michael, thank you so very much for joining me here at New Africa News. And I hope that you guys will come back and join us again for our spot. So thank you all.
Thank you. It's been a good discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see everyone. Thanks, Mona.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
See you Wednesday.
Thanks, yes. Mona.
Thank you.